Welcome back to the roundtable. Our next guest is Bassem Youssef, who is known as the John Stewart of the Arab world. He was a heart surgeon in his home country of Egypt before becoming the host of the first political satire show in the Middle East. He has appeared on The Daily Show, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and other late night programs, and was also featured in Time 100, Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people in the world. He's also the author of the new book, The Magical Reality of Nadia, which is out from Scholastic Press. We'll talk about that and about his amazing career, but it's a great pleasure to welcome Bassem Youssef to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
We'll get into your story in a moment, but what brought you to the book of wanting to tell this story of Nadia?
Well, Scholastic talked to me about me writing a children's book. I told them I have no idea how to write a children's book. So they said, like, maybe it could be something that is related to your experience that you want your children to know about. So that kind of made me think that, you know, we as adults are now having to deal with all of these political problems, all of these political changes. And it all comes down to really being ignorant and not knowing each other and not giving the benefit of the doubt to the other. So I thought, like, you know, and what happened is that, like, our next generation, our kids kind of like carry that because we haven't fixed that for ourselves. So maybe I want to write like a story that is full of history and magic, but in the same time, it can tackle the stuff that where our children at middle school age start to get exposed to, like, you know, diversity, like inclusion, like understanding people who might be different from them. But at the same time, I didn't want it to be on the nose. I didn't want it to be preachy. So I kind of like put a lot of magic and a lot of history and a lot of adventure in it. And that's how the book came to life, because at the end of the day, I want my daughter and other people's daughters and sons understanding these things about growing up and being in a community that is basically different from each other.
So as you say, this is based on real life experiences, and it's a funny book, it's a heartfelt book, and there's a lot of empathy and courage, which often seems to be missing in what kids like Nadia deal with every day.
Yes, and the thing is, like, I think we got so wrapped up in our own problems and not understanding that would kind of like seep down to our children. And if they don't get to deal with this at an early age, they will grow up to be an even worse version of us. So that is why it is important to speak to the kids in a way that they will understand and kind of like enjoy it. And that's why I'm actually very, very happy with how the book turned out to be.
When you're writing a children's book, as you say, you had some trepidation at first, but then once you start doing it, did you find it fun, or was it still a challenge?
It was so much fun writing it, and also it's a team effort. Like, I wrote it, like, Catherine Daly, she's the veteran children's author. And she's wonderful. And she's kind of like, I may have like come up with the concepts, the ideas, the characters, the vision, but she kind of breathed life into the characters. And I'm so honored to be working with a wonderful woman on that book, who knows really how to speak to children. So I think I was lucky getting a lot of help.
When you tell the story and you put it out into the world, and I know it's newly out, but what has the reaction been, and what is that like for you to receive it?
Oh, it was amazing. Like, I mean, people are taking pictures of their kids, reading the book and sending it to them. And it for me, you had a lot of parents with, you know, from immigrants' background who wanted that kind of representation. But also I've got, like, Americans, white Americans reading the book and really enjoying it, because this is not a book that is directed for immigrants or people of color. It has a lot of global values that I think all our kids should understand. So it's not like a white versus brown book. It is more about like empathy versus ignorance book, understanding versus hate book. And there's a lot of history and magic and action. And that's why, I mean, we're hoping that this will someday be an animation series someday.
Tell us about your coming to this country, because as you say, you came to America after you had your own share of turmoil, in the Arab world, but not the best time to arrive in America, right?
Yes, I joke about that. It's kind of like the last 4 years kind of like gave me perspective about like what are people worried about. I think they're worried about and afraid of things that they don't understand. And when you don't understand something, you become a little bit too hostile and too and a little bit too extreme in your reaction. So that is why I kind of like found it interesting to be here in those 4 years.
When you're here, do you feel that it is watching what's happening, and obviously watching it through the past 4 years of the Trump administration, that and you're a comedian at heart. So do you look at it as, oh, okay, I have to find humor in this, and yet none of this is really all that funny.
Yeah, actually, I have to admit that I get that a lot. I think people got too wrapped up in like how funny stuff is, but it's kind of like they forget how this can actually in real life can actually have very unfunny repercussions on people. So a little of it is okay, but when the madness and the lunacy kind of like kicks in the whole time, it ceases to be funny. And because it will have like a real life impact on people. So you can joke about it as much as you want, but like if things don't change, it ceases to be funny.
And it wasn't funny what made you leave Egypt in the first place. I mean, you become very popular. You have this show, which is very popular. And then basically you're kicked out because of the jokes that you're making.
Yes. And I mean, part of it is a little bit funny, which is, like, you know, having to be interrogated about your jokes. You know, when they interrogate you for 6 hours for your jokes and tell you, please explain the jokes for us. And I go for 6 hours trying to explain the jokes. And then midway, you realize when they read the jokes back to you, it's not that funny. So I went back to my show and I kind of fired half of my staff. I said, like, I wasn't laughing when they're reading the jokes back to me.
I have to punch them up a little bit.
I know. And so, yeah. So, it is funny now because, like, you know, I go out and I do stand-up comedy and I talk about those experiences. But at that time, it wasn't very funny because, you know, it was dangerous. I had to leave. So, but now at least I'm using these experiences in my stand-up comedy shows, and I talk about them and people enjoy them very much.
But while you were in your home country, and oh, by the way, well, I'll get into the doctor part in a second. But so when you're in your home country, who ultimately ends up hating you?
Oh, a lot of everybody. So basically, when I was making fun of the Islamists, the pro-Islamists hated me.
Yeah.
And then the pro-military loved me because I was against the Islamists. When the military came into the power, now the pro-military hated me because now they can't have me making fun of the people that they support. The Islamists continued to hate me. And then when I had to escape, the revolutionary hated me because they considered me as a sellout because, I am sorry, I didn't stay at home and got put in jail and got killed. So they could have something to tweet about. So it's kind of like, as you can see, I'm kind of like collecting enemies as I go, which is great. And here I collected a few enemies in my comedy routine too. So I'm kind of like enjoying the hate a little bit with a lot of love that sometimes comes in and makes things good all over again. But I got my share of enemies.
Well, now let me ask you about then bringing your act and your life to the United States of America. Do you feel freer, or is that not the feeling that you feel? I mean, can you get away with more, or is it less, or is it the same?
You get away of different things because here there are stuff that would put you in trouble, not put you in a jail trouble, but can put you in a public outcry kind of trouble. So the thing is here, the worst that can happen to you that you can lose your career, but you're not going to be put in jail because something that you said. You know, you can say the worst thing ever, but you're not going to be put in jail because that's freedom of speech, which is great about this country. You might have some sort of a backlash if you say something that was unpopular or, you know, offensive to some people, or, you know, and people lose their career over that the whole time here in America. But at least the government cannot come after you and put you in jail. So I think that is a big difference.
And now is such a weird time. I mean, you say you're out doing stand-up. Are you doing it in front of an audience? You're out?
Yes, yes. We're doing it with some of the states that don't really care. But they have like a... we have kind of like reduced the numbers, so it's kind of like limited capacities now.
Yeah, it's so you ask the agent to book you in places where they don't care.
Yeah. So, all right, I'm thinking it's because I'm a little bit immune now because of COVID, because I kind of like got it, and so it's kind of like I'm protected by my natural immunity for a while, but I still wear masks.
Oh.
So I'm kind of like contributing in the mass herd immunity.
Well, and so you did a show for a long time. What do you make of late night comedians now who have to do this very tough material to silence, to absolute silence?
Oh my God, I feel for them. I mean, I'm dying for them. They're troopers, they're heroes to do that, because to do that on an empty studio, oh my God, without the laughter, without the interaction, without the energy of the people, oh my God, it's terrible.
And you would never do that, and I'm curious as to what that laughter meant to you when you were doing the show, of having the audience with you and doing material that may land, may not, and still be able to go on.
But yeah, I mean, you get a lot of energy. I mean, there's like instant gratification when you do it with audiences. That's why I have refused. Like, I mean, I did a couple of like one of those like Zoom stand up and I was dying inside every second. So to do that, to do something like that without any kind of audience, it's terrible.
So this all started, and I guess I think this is a fair question, of how a heart surgeon ends up in the position that you're in now. Rock, paper, scissors, that seems to be a good gig. What was it about it that you said, okay, I don't want to do that anymore?
Well, I mean, I didn't, it was not like kind of like a sudden decision. I was a doctor and I did those like YouTube videos satirizing the state run media. I didn't have any TV show yet, but like my video started to go viral. And then I would go into the morning rounds and the patients would recognize me. It's like, oh my God, you are the doctor. You are the guy from the funny guy from the videos. Oh, you are my doctor. And like, are you going to operate on me? And this is where it was difficult to maintain that job, because now patients will not take you seriously, because I don't think they would trust a comedian to crack their chest open. So, so it was just like a matter of time, and I had to leave medicine. And I always joke about, like, you know, I'm not a doctor anymore. And because of that decision, many more patients are alive today.
I want to go back to the book for a second, which is The Magical Reality of Nadia. And so you coming to this country with your own daughter, what was that situation like, even for her, and sort of understanding not only what you were going through, but what she's going through?
Well, I think she's still having a hard time understanding how big the show was. But I think she is. We are lucky to kind of settle in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is a very diverse city. So from the get-go, she was in a school with different people from different backgrounds. I mean, this is something that I'm so happy that I could actually offer her, because that is something that I would never offer her back in Egypt. And I think having her to go into a class that is so diverse kind of helped me write the book, to understand, have this idea of like being different is a source of strength, not a source of weakness. And that's like the best thing about this country. It is the source of strength of this country. It is basically having all of these different people from different backgrounds.
What's fascinating to me about the book is that you use Egyptian mythology and history and magic,
yes,
in the story, which is really fun. You're not making it, oh, this is the typical story of a young girl having a tough time. You bring in these, yeah, elements which add spark, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a huge fan of Egyptology. I mean, we're the only country in the world that have a whole science named after us, Egyptology, you know. And because we have some of the most amazing ancient stories and fables and mythologies. And I thought, if we go back in time and bring back those stories, we can have Nadia in the book, kind of, we can help her deal with the stories of today. So she goes back in time and she gets the morale of a certain story or mythology of something that she is going to. And that helps her with her quest, dealing with the difficulties that she has to deal with in today's world. And that's kind of the back and forth between the past and the present, which I like very much.
Talk to me about, I am interested, of course, you are so often referred to as the John Stewart of Egypt, but you were on his show, he was on your show, which is fascinating. How did that end up happening?
Oh, yes. So he was in Jordan filming his movie, Rosewater.
Yeah.
And I told him, since you're next door, can you come? And he said, absolutely. Because a year ago, when I was visiting his show, and I didn't have that theater yet, I told him, I'm going to make you proud. And he came and he saw my theater and he was blown away because it was a huge theater. And he said, that's much better than what I have. And the beautiful thing, and he told, and the way that he was received by the audience in Egypt, I mean, it was out of this world. He told me, I have never thought in my life that a short Jewish guy from Jersey will be welcomed in that manner in the middle of Cairo. And yeah.
Did you?
I think that was a day of validation for me.
Did you feel equally as welcome in the studio in Hell's Kitchen?
Oh yeah, I know. I mean, the audience here were lovely and amazing. But when he was welcomed in Egypt, he was an icon.
Yeah,
he was like an idol. He was a god, and people loved him so much.
You mentioned this when you were talking. You said that your daughter perhaps didn't know how big the show was. You had an audience of 40 million people weekly. I mean, that is a huge audience. Some would say half the population of Egypt. So that's a hell of a...
Yes.
Those are good numbers.
And also a hell of a pressure. When you have 40 million people watching, that means that you have 40 million people having an opinion about you, which is very scary.
And how much of that do you say, I can't let that bother me? And how much do you say, do you live under a rock and just say, okay, I don't want to know about what they're saying. I just want to do what I'm doing. Or do you have to be aware?
Well, I have to say that being aware, it kind of cost me a lot of peace of mind because, that's not everything that would be said about you will be kind or cool, because that is the nature of being exposed that much, and sometimes it got to me, and sometimes it, I just had to kind of deal with it, and when the negative tide will come, I would just put it on the side,
When you got to Los Angeles, how much of, and what was the pressure to say, okay, I want to do what I was doing before, I just want to do it here?
Well, the thing is, when I'm doing it here, I have to be very, you have to be smarter, because you can't just say, hey, I'm going to do a political satire show like I did in Egypt, because here the market is already saturated. So here I have to find my own niche, my own space, in my new country. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing other stuff. I'm using comedy. I'm doing stand up. I'm kind of getting my own niche in the country, in this space, because I can't just come. I have to live with the fact that I'm not going to be as big as I was in Egypt, and I have to start from kind of a much lower level than I was. I cannot just expect that doors will open for me here in America when I come. Yeah, you had 40 million people watching your episodes back in Egypt. Good for you. But here in America, you have to start from scratch, and you have to push yourself in different directions in order to you know, achieve a certain status. You cannot just like depend on what you did in Egypt and think that things will open up for you.
But at the end of the day, it comes down to happiness and joy.
Yes.
And you're pleased with where you are.
I'm happy that like I have a chance to reinvent myself at such a later stage of life. I'm almost 47, and I'm in the last 10 years I kind of reinvented myself 3-4 times. I was a doctor, and then I became I did a YouTube, and then from YouTube did a TV show, and then I had to leave all that behind and come to America and try to reinvent myself in a new country with a new language, to a new audience, to a new different kind of performances. Now I'm writing a book to children in my second language. So all of these are, I think it's an incredible journey, and I'm very happy. I mean, sometimes there's always these feelings of uncertainty and fear that you're not going to make it. But the beauty of this journey itself and trying to learn something every day and teach yourself something every day, I think it's priceless. And that's what I'm enjoying right now, kind of like the whole reinvention and the remaking of yourself.
Well, the book is just lovely. It is The Magical Reality of Nadia. It is out from Scholastic. Bassem Youssef, I thank you so much for spending time with us. What a great pleasure to speak with you. I wish you all the luck in the world. Hey,
thank you so much. And I hope to be on your show again soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Again, Bassem Youssef is the author of the new book, The Magic Reality of Nadia. The book is published by Scholastic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.